The Hoop Heads Podcast is brought to you by Head Start Basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoop Heads Podcast. I'm Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. Today we're going to be doing a very quick NBA Finals preview edition of the Hoop Heads Podcast. We're excited to talk a little bit about the Cavs Warriors, number four. Jason, what do you think, man?
Well, I'll be honest with you. After Game 5 against the Celtics, I didn't think that was going to happen for the Cavs. And after Game 5 for the Rockets, you know, with the Chris Paul injury, we were kind of left hanging the balance. And, you know, he rushed away saying he was perfectly fine. But once someone does that, you always start to worry. And I think that was the big key factor in the end up being the Western Conference, at least.
Yeah, I agree. I was strangely confident in the Cavs, despite the fact that they were down 3-2. Probably the first time in LeBron's career that I actually felt confident that he was going to figure out a way to get it done. I've always been a little bit hesitant to have full confidence in LeBron in the biggest moments. But this year, for the first time, I felt like I really came around to believing that LeBron was going to figure out a way to get it done. And then out west, just seemed like those two games the Rockets won, Game 4 and Game 5. Were just very, very strange games. And the fact that they were able to hold on despite the fact that Harden was 0-for-20 from the three-point line.
So terrible.
It was unbelievable.
But don't worry, he's going to get the MVP, right?
He is going to get the MVP, which, again,
travesty.
You look at what, I mean, I guess it's a regular season award, so it is what it is. But when you watch James Harden play, he inspires in me zero confidence that he's going to get anything done in big moments. And conversely, obviously LeBron is LeBron is the guy that has been able to bring the Cavs and the roster that they have all the way to the finals. So it's a clear, I think, if you were going to vote for the best player in the league for the last 10 or 12 years, it's clearly LeBron. And I understand why Harden's going to get the MVP, but when you watch the playoffs, it's hard to make a comparison between the two players.
The other thing I was going to say is, I could summarize our feelings on James Harden in one text that you sent me last night during the Game 7. You said, "Man, do I want to play Harden."
Yeah.
And when I hear that, I don't think MVP. It's just my opinion, And I know it's a regular season award, like you said, but it just boggles my mind that he's played so well in the regular season, but he's been just so atrocious. I know the last two games that could completely combine the fact that Chris Paul being injured played a huge role, because their typical ball movement and style just wasn't happening because they were missing his ball handling, missing Chris Paul's ability to create shots.
Harden
was really the only one on that team last night that even attempted to create their own shots. Everyone else was just kind of standing there jacking up threes. Like, I know that's their offense, but at the same time, it just didn't look like it had the same ebb and flow that it normally did.
I mean, it's super difficult to be the only player on your team that can create the entire offense. You have to create your own offense, and you have to create offense for everybody else in your team. And so, obviously Harden was put into that position when Chris Paul went down, but LeBron is clearly been in that position this entire year with the roster that the Cavs have put around him. And
the corpses.
People forget how exhausting, how exhausting that can be. And maybe they don't even understand how exhausting it can be. But when you're creating everything for your teammates and for yourself, that can wear you down. So certainly I think that had an impact on Harden. And to be honest, I didn't watch a ton of Rockets basketball this year. But anytime I did, I can honestly say I came away unimpressed with Harden, at least compared to having the opportunity to watch LeBron all the time.
All right, so what are you? Let's talk finals now. Enough of this conference stuff. What are the keys for the Warriors? I'll start with mine. I think I can't believe I'm about to say this statement, but I think one of the biggest keys for them is Andre Iguodala's health. And I think the matchup situation is going to be an issue if he's not back. And I have full faith and confidence that he's going to play game one. I really think the reason they were so confident coming into the game last night that they could sit him for another night before he showed up to play, I really think he'll be back Thursday. And I think him, he creates matchup problems. You know, the Hampton Five, I think it's a really big issue for the Cavs with Iguodala out there. And, you know, he's probably the fifth best player in the starting lineup, and by probably he is. But at the same time, I think that he creates one of the biggest matchup problems for the Cavs, at least on the, you know, defensive end of the floor.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. He definitely, you know, if you look back to the very first finals that the Cavs and Warriors played back in 2015, you know, Iguodala ended up being the MVP. Simply because of his ability to, I wouldn't say stop LeBron, but his ability to at least semi-control and make LeBron work harder than maybe he would have liked to be able to score. So certainly the presence of Iguodala is a key. I just think that, for me, the key to the Warriors, and I don't know if I would have said this a week ago, but, you know, some of those moments against the Rockets, it just seemed like for the first time ever they sort of got a little bit discombobulated and didn't really know. They didn't look like the Warriors. They ended up looking like a team that was just taking turns playing one-on-one. And every time they got into that particular mode, whether it was in, you know, the first halves of Game 6 and 7 or during, you know, huge parts of Games 4 and 5, they just looked like a different team than what they've looked like before. And so it'll be interesting to see if that was just you know, the defensive scheme and defensive players that the Rockets could throw at them, or whether or not that's something that the Cavs can somehow try to duplicate with, you know, with their game plan. So it'll be interesting. But I think that the Warriors playing a game where, again, they're moving the ball and doing all the things they do with the, you know, the off-ball screening and getting people into switches and all the stuff that they do all the time that just forces the defense to bend and to react in ways that they're just not used to. I think if they can get the Cavs doing that, I think the Cavs are in trouble, because I just don't know that they have the defensive personnel to be able to contend with all that. Whereas if the Warriors somehow fall into a little bit more of a trap of going more one-on-one and doing things a little bit more selfishly than maybe they typically do, I think that can open up a door for the Cavs to possibly be able to get in there and get a game or two.
Yeah, I think the ball movement aspect, you could definitely see it in the third quarter last night. Those screens that were getting set, now the one being quite illegal that they couldn't believe they didn't call it. The guy literally, that one Curry three in the corner, the guy literally moved.
That was Jordan Bell.
Jordan Bell, that was a nice screen.
He was boxing out Harden on that play.
But anyways, you know, those plays that, you know, Curry rubs off those screens and goes to the corner, hits those three, there was two or three situations last night that, you know, I don't know how the Cavs defend that. Quite frankly, like you said, the defensive personnel, I mean, when you're relying on Jeff Green to be one of your stalwarts at the defensive end,
Uncle Jeff Green.
I love Jeff Green.
He was fantastic. He was fantastic in Game 7 for sure. And I think, you know, it always goes back to when you're trying to defend the Warriors. You know, you know, inevitably there's a 18-2 run, there's a 15-3 run, there's a 12-0 run, and the question is, how do you respond in the middle of that run to keep it at 10-4 or 12-6 instead of 18-2? An 18-2 run basically just destroys you. A 12-6 run allows you to stay in the game, and I think the difference there is, what do you do defensively to slow it down? And more importantly, what do you do at the offensive end to kind of control tempo and make sure that you're getting a good shot every time down the floor so that you're not turning the ball over and suddenly you have, you know, a quick three threes, you know, banged home by the Warriors that just, again, demoralize your entire team and make it so. How do you overcome that? You almost have to win the rest of the game by 15 or 20 points to overcome the run or runs that they have every game. So I think for the Warriors, they really need to, you know, they need to really continue to put together, you know, those kinds of explosive runs they have with the three. And if they, you know, if they were to somehow go cold or have an off game or an off series shooting the ball from 3-point line, which isn't likely when you have three of the probably top 5 or 10 shooters in the history of basketball, you don't go cold very often. But you know, again, it could happen, but I think the key is for them to play the basketball that they've played all year and bang home threes so they get their runs.
All right, so let's shift focus to the Cavs. I'll start. I think the glaring one to me is the health of Kevin Love. is he going to be there? You know, I know he might seem like a liability on the defensive end, but offensively, if you're going to compete with the Warriors, you need to have some scoring. And I just don't have the confidence in some of the rest of the roster to provide that secondary scoring that Kevin Love provides, and I think that it's going to be important. Now, they didn't give an update today, and we're taping this on late Tuesday night about his condition. But if I had to hazard a guess, if they're even like questionable on him, I would think he's probably going to be out game one, and they'll wait until Sunday if they absolutely have to. I just don't think they want to risk him going out there Thursday if he's even questioned. Being like,
yeah, well, 100%. He's got a history of a couple concussions in the last year or two, and I think, you know, nowadays everybody leans towards being much more conservative than they would have been back in the day. And so I think it's a good point that you don't want to bring him back for game one, have him get dinged in the head in game one, and then have him be out for the rest of the series. You'd rather bring him back when he's fully ready, so that hopefully he can play out the rest of the series. I think Kevin Love's an interesting player in this series, in that, you know, in years past, he's kind of been looked at as a liability, and where do you hide him? And, you know, despite the fact of his offense, but now the roster is, you know, it's a much more challenging roster for LeBron to be able to carry, because without Kyrie Irving scoring, you know, where do you get scoring? It's just if Kevin Love's not available, your ability to generate points goes down tremendously. And it goes back to the point about the Warriors and whether or not Iguodala is available. If Iguodala is not available, you now have more potential hiding places for Kevin Love on defense. And I think that ability to shift lineups that the Warriors have with Iguodala
gives them versatility.
Gives them versatility, that if he's not there, allows the Cavs maybe to play some different lineups that are certainly more difficult for them to play when the death lineup, the Hampton Five, is a part of it. So it'll be interesting. I'm still, as much as I like Kevin Love, I still wish he would do more. I still wish he could do more, and I don't know whether.
Do you wish he was more Minnesota Kevin Love?
I just wish he would do more. And again, I don't know if that's a result of the scheme. I don't know if that's a result of him being diminished as a player. I don't know if that's a result of his physical, conditions and injuries have just lessened his athletic ability. I do know that he was playing very, very well against Toronto and seemed like he was moving better. And if he could get back to that level of mobility against the Warriors, I think it would be tremendously helpful. To me, the key for the Cavs is, can they play the game at a slower tempo and keep the game in the 95 to 105?
Follow game 6 and 7 of 2016.
Yeah, I think if they can keep the tempo at that particular level and then get contributions from two or three of the role players every night, again, and it may be a rotating cast of characters in terms of who it is on any given night. Will it be George Hill? Will it be Jeff Green? Will it be, will it be Kyle Korver? Will it be JR? I don't know the answer to that. I don't think anybody associated with the Cavs knows the answer to that. But if there would be a way that the Cavs could keep the tempo under control, limit the number of possessions in the game, and then have two or three of those role players, have a series of 5-6 games where they were really playing well and shooting the ball at a higher percentage than what you might normally think they could, I think that's the only way they have a chance. I think if the score gets above 105, the odds of the Cavs being able to win a shootout against the Warriors are very, very, very slim, unless there's some kind of other injury in addition to Andre Iguodala, to be honest.
And I think to go along with that, they can't rely on LeBron to play 48 minutes, seven games. It's not going to happen. He played 48 minutes the other night, and after the game, he was literally laying on the floor because he was so tired and exhausted. And there were times that I could just tell, you could just tell he was taking possessions off because he was just so tired. And he's played an unprecedented amount of minutes this year. Like, he's never even he played his 101st game, or is it this Thursday is going to be his 100? He's never had to play this many games in a season, even when he's won a championship, because he's taken games off. I still question the move to play him in all 82 games in the regular season. You know, we can look back on that, and you know,
for some reason that was a point of pride for LeBron this year. For some reason, I'm not sure what the reason is. But for some reason, that was obviously a point of pride, because I got to believe that as an organization that they would have been in favor of him.
I mean, every other year he's played here. I mean, heck, the first year he was here, he went to Miami for 2 weeks to
right.
rehab and, yep. and just like relax. And then 3 years later with a lesser roster, you're going to run him out there for 82 games, and you know, and then the 82nd game they have to leave him out there until he scores 10 points because yeah. he's got the double digit
right.
streak going.
For sure.
I just don't understand it, you know. And that, yes, LeBron, he can do what he wants because he's LeBron, but at the same time, I think I question that if the end game is to win a championship, which I clearly is, I just don't understand his reasoning for doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a testament to his conditioning. It's a, you know, I don't know, again, I don't know what his reasons were for wanting to play all 82. But obviously that's what he went ahead and did, and now you have to deal with whatever the ramifications are of that. I think one of the things that, if you look back at last year's finals, and I don't have those, the numbers in front of me, but I remember reading at the time that, you know, the plus-minus for when LeBron was on and off the floor last year in the finals was, like, ridiculous. You know, he was off the floor for, you know, maybe 30 minutes the entire series, and in that 30 minutes the Cavs were minus whatever, and then obviously when he was on the floor it was even, the Cavs maybe even been a little bit ahead. And so, you know, it's going to be another key for the Cavs is, can they weather the 4 minutes or 5 minutes of the game that LeBron sits out and not get hit with one of those 18. Warrior 18-0 runs or 10-0 runs or 6-0 runs or whatever it is during those brief moments when LeBron's trying to catch a rest. Because, again, in this series, it's going to be much, much harder for him to rest defensively because
there's no one to rest on.
There's no one really to rest on. Everybody in Golden State is going to have a key role in trying to attack the Cavs, and so there's not going to be a place for LeBron to sit and be able to rest too much on defense. So he's going to have to get some actual rest on the bench, and whether or not the rest of the Cavs can weather that storm will be a huge key for whether or not the Cavs can compete in the series.
All right, prediction time. You want to go first or you want me to go first?
I will go first. I honestly don't believe the Cavs are going to win a game. I don't think they're going to be within 15 points of the Warriors in any game. So my prediction is a 4-0 Golden State Warriors sweep. I will be rooting tremendously hard as a Cavs fan for my prediction to be wrong. Thankfully, I don't enjoy sports betting, so I won't have any money on a 4-0 Warriors sweep. So I will not have any conflicted interests in what I hope happens. I will be rooting very, very hard for the Cavs, and I hope they continue to defy conventional wisdom and expectation. But I would be stunned if the result is anything but a Warriors victory, and to be honest, I'll be stunned if the Cavs are able to somehow pull a game out. Although Golden State's sort of been, they're up and down in terms of their concentration and level of focus, so maybe the Cavs will sneak one out, but I'm going to stick with my 4-0 Warriors prediction.
I've been going back and forth on this all day. You know, I have talked with some people saying like, I think the Cavs might get swept, but I think they're going to sneak one out. I think it's going to go five. I think there's several reasons for that. One, my dad will say LeBron will never let a sweep happen, and the NBA will never let LeBron get swept again in the finals. My dad thinks it's all about the money.
Your dad has a conspiracy theory
about the NBA.
There you go.
But shout out Dave's uncle. Anyways, I agree. I don't see that any way the NBA is going to let this fizzle out in four games, and I don't necessarily know what they'll do, but you know, I think the Cavs are going to lose the first two in Golden State, and they're going to probably, if I had to guess, sneak game three, because that's the game to steal if you're going to steal a game at home.
Right.
It's going to
yeah.
be game three, I yeah. think, because the Warriors are going to come in up 2-0, you know, behind the home crowd, all that stuff. So I think if they win a game, it's going to be game three, but I could totally see your point of view happening, and, you know, sweeping. I don't think they can win a game in Golden State, unless Kendrick Perkins decides to go out there and actually dress and not coach and break someone's leg or something. And I never root for that, but I just don't see there any way that they're going to win a game in Golden State. I would love for it to be a Cavs victory, but I'm just going into this with a very realistic expectation. You know, I'm kind of just going to enjoy these games with LeBron, because who knows, and this is a topic for another show, but what's going to happen after this season.
It's still going to be miserable if they lose.
It's going to be miserable, but at the same time, I'm going to try to enjoy watching LeBron play for the Cavs and hope that this isn't the end, but at the same time, try to enjoy the last minutes of it, if it is how this is going to end.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch. I mean, again, despite the fact that I really don't think the Cavs have a realistic shot at winning the finals, it's just fun to be able to have a team that is your team that plays this deep into June every year. It's unbelievable that this is Cavs-Warriors 4. If the Cavs somehow miraculously are able to win this series and split 2 out of the 4 titles from a team that has, you know, arguably 4 All-Stars and for sure 2 Hall of Famers, mm-hmm. possibly a 3rd Hall of Famer, depending on how things break out for the rest of their careers. It would be unbelievable. Getting 1, to be honest, was unbelievable as a lifelong Cleveland sports fan. So I'll take my 1 and be happy with that, and anything else that we get from this point on is gravy. And it's just been a pleasure to be able to watch LeBron and the things that he's been able to do, especially in this playoffs, where for the first time I felt he reached a level where when I watched him, I just expected him to figure a way out and figure out what he needed to do in order to get the Cavs the victory. And the game 7 performance against the Celtics was just incredible. What he was able to do, again, with Uncle Jeff Green as the second leading scorer, who, you know, again, if you look at his reputation, speaking of Jeff Green around the league, was that he was a guy who comes up small in big moments. And, you know, for once, you know, he did. And as a result of that...
Much to the chagrin of Bill Simmons, by the way.
Absolutely. And now they're, and now they get another shot at the Warriors. So all you can do is be there. There's 28 other teams that, are sitting there saying, hey, we'd like to take our shot at it. So you can't win if you're not there. And so that's how I think the Cavs have to approach it. And again, you got to go and you got to play. You got to play the games. And when you have the best player in the world on your side, you can't count them out completely. But I still don't think they're going to be able to. I don't think having the best player in the world is going to be able to overcome just the level of talent that the Warriors have collectively as a team. So it'll be interesting to see.
I agree, and I really hope they pull it out, but. Not positive. I feel not very optimistic about this one, sadly.
Yep, I agree. So we'll just have to sit back and watch it together. And at some point during the finals or after the finals, we'll jump back on the podcast and share our thoughts again. Thanks, Jason.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, brought to you by Head Start Basketball.